like I said, because most people listen via audio anyways. So there's no like official start to the podcast if you've ever listened or watched or whatever. Although I wouldn't be surprised if you never have, but I also wouldn't shame you, and that's okay.
I watched a couple of them on YouTube.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, was it just like, let's see if David's doing anything embarrassing? We need to vet him for the band? Or was it like...
It was more like, I'm having trouble sleeping. I'll put something on that's boring as
hell. You piece of shit. Yeah, you son of a bitch. Okay, well, yeah, I don't know. I expected anything less than that right off the bat. So I think as good a place as any to kind of start before we get into, because of course we'll get into Midwest Guys. Of course we'll get into the JEJ3 films of it all, and the fatherhood of it all. But do you have a clear memory of when we met, or is it just through reciprocating stories?
I don't remember the exact date, but I just remember it was a show up in Kalkaska.
Yep.
Odie Productions.
Yep.
I can't remember if it was in like that little community hall or if it was at the Coliseum.
That's so funny.
But yeah, that was like a decade or so ago.
Yep. My first memory, although I know we had to have played a show before this, but my first memory of you was the Hawthorne Heights show that we all played together. Because I think it was a bit of a heavier leaning show. And at the time, Live for Tomorrow was more rooted in just like your traditional feel good pop punk. And Midwest Guys was kind of doing the same thing. So we were like the only like pop punk bands on that bill that weren't like exclusively screaming or whatever. So you guys called us up for a song, which I think was a Blink-182 cover, and then vice versa, we called you up for the same. I think you guys might have been doing All the Small Things or Damn It. I can't remember.
Yeah, sing it. Might have been Damn It.
All punk bands at a certain, or pop punk bands are like, let's take something from Dude Ranch or Enema of the State or Take Off Your Pants. Yeah. But nothing beyond that for some reason. I don't see a lot of bands cover anything outside of those from Blink-182. Like, no, I don't see a lot of Untitled Era stuff. Like, maybe people will go all the way back to, like, Carousel from Cheshire Cat, but I don't see any other Blink covers.
I mean, we did a Blink cover set once where we had to learn just, like, I mean, I had a hard time trying to learn all these songs. Because at the time I wasn't like as into Blink as the other two guys. So it was not only like learning the songs, but familiarizing myself with the songs in general. Like, I mean, one of my favorite covers from that set was when we covered Feeling This.
Yeah.
And it's just like one of those songs where like people don't immediately think about that for a Blink cover. Yep. But when they hear it, they're like, oh yeah, that's a great song.
Yep. One of my new warm-ups that I'm trying to get down that you've probably heard me just practicing throughout the day whenever we have a band practice is just doing the rim click for Always. So if like people want me to do a sound check, I just start doing that. And I like scan the crowd to see if anybody knows that one. Because if you know the riff, then you're like, oh, shit. But if not, it's just like it's just clicking sounds in the background. Yeah, I feel like that's definitely the first memory that I have of you. And then beyond that, I just saw you existing mostly through social media until I moved here. But that can kind of be the tail end of this. I think where I'd more importantly want to start is, to the best of your knowledge, how can you recap like the birth of Midwest Skies to begin with?
Well, so it's like, towards the tail end of our college careers, we were playing a lot of, like, cover sets at parties. You know, like, Fall Out Boy, Yellow Card, All American Rejects, stuff like that that people love to get drunk and scream the words to.
Is that pretty much, like, exclusively where it started? Like, the three of you were like, let's do covers together?
Yeah, but it wasn't necessarily like a let's focus on being a cover band. This was just like, hey, this is pretty fun. Like, you play bass, I play guitar, you play drums, let's let's mess around and see what happens.
College, then, yeah.
What's that?
College, you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it kind of got to a point where, like, we started meeting other people who were friends with some of these, like, up-and-coming bands who were, like, big during, like, the MySpace era. And we got to meet some of these guys, and I was just kind of like, this is kind of dope. Like, what if we tried maybe doing some originals? And we started messing around with writing some original tunes. And at the time, I was super into, like, more of, like, the indie rock and stuff like that. Yiki was actually playing bass in a metal band.
I was just going to say, you mentioned really quickly as a ADHD aside that the other guys were more familiar with Blink. But I remember you telling me that Ryan came into the band with, like, a root of hardcore. So that's just kind of a funny mesh.
He was playing in a metal band at the time, and we're like, well, if we're going to try this, like, with some originals, we're definitely going to need a bassist. And, I mean, obviously, the stuff that he was doing was, like, way watered down with us compared to, like, what he's playing in this, you know, in the metal band. It was, like, way more complex. I mean, they even invited me out to jam with them one day, and we're all just, like, hanging out in their practice space. And they're like, well, let's jam on something. And then they're playing, and I'm, like, holding my guitar like a kid who's never touched a guitar in his life. I'm just like, I have no idea what the hell I'm doing right now.
Had, like, you been in a band up until that point, or had you, like, musically collaborated with people before then?
I was in a band in high school. We were called the Blank Dice. And we were, like, God,
I love this.
We were very much, like, you know, the Strokes, the Hives, the Killers, like, that style of rock.
Sweet.
And I just played rhythm. I never really bothered to learn any leads or solos. You know, I'm not a shredder, so, like, I just
you are these days. Come on now, man. You can rip a solo. But I see what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
I was kind of forced into that role, but no, yeah, I've just, like, always been, like, a rhythm guitarist, just because it's always been just a lot easier for me. And, you know, taking, like, the easy route there. But
I also sort of, before you continue on, I sort of like the backstory of it all. Did you have aspirations when you were in this high school band of, like, this band can do things, so I can see in us that we are good? Or was it just, did you have the perception at that time that, like, we're just a bunch of punk kids who are doing this because we got nothing better to do?
I think a lot of it came with, like, with beer goggles on. I mean, we're getting such good feedback playing covers at these parties. We're like, yeah, we could totally do this with, like, original tunes.
Okay.
It wasn't really the case, though. I mean, like, when we started, like, getting together an original set list, and we started actually playing shows at venues around Grand Rapids, it was very hard to get people to come out to our shows because, you know, we're playing with a lot of local bands who are from Grand Rapids originally and have that built-in fan base where, you know, they're bringing out friends and family to shows where all of us met in college, but none of us are from the Grand Rapids area.
Well, and the music scene is huge at that time, right? In Grand Rapids?
Yeah.
I mean,
it was huge, and it was very, very competitive.
And not just the music scene, the pop punk, like, punk adjacent music scene. Yeah.
Yeah, it just seems like there wasn't really any sense of camaraderie within the local scene. It was always, like, just, like, very cutthroat. And, I mean, there were times where, you know, I don't want to name the bands, but, like, where we would play shows, we would find out, like, how many tickets they sold to a show. We would run to an ATM just to pull out some cash so we can buy one or two more tickets than them, just so we have a better slot on the bill.
Hell, and yeah.
bragging rights, like, oh, we sold more tickets than you.
Oh,
you know.
Damn, that's cold.
Yeah, I mean, in hindsight, it was, like, it was stupid, but...
Yeah, whatever.
I mean, that's just, like, that's kind of what everyone did. And it,
sure.
I mean, it sucked. But I think
it also mattered. It mattered. Yeah. Like, if you didn't do that kind of thing, you were going to get buried.
Yeah. And, I mean, looking at how the scene is today versus how it was then, I mean, there's just like such a huge sense of camaraderie between a lot of local bands. Like, not only because, hey, we play music together, but like, you get a chance to like, you know, bond with these guys, and they become not only just like a band that you know, but like really good friends in general. Right. So like, I and love the shift that it's taken.
They also, I think maybe it's the blessing of the type of music we're making now, but I'm totally comfortable expressing, like, some of the guys in Bring Your Best, every time we go to a show, they're wearing our merch and like supporting and repping our stuff. Like, that's cool to see.
Yeah.
So, okay, you were in the high school band. You had like little childhood aspirations, but it didn't really go anywhere other than learning how to play the instruments. Midwest Skies comes around post cover bands. You guys start writing originals. What do you think your first, what do you recall as your first move towards like trying to take it seriously?
I think our first move was when we started gaining a lot of traction on MySpace and Pure Volume.
So it was MySpace, okay.
With just some like really crappy demos, and we're like, we should like go record somewhere. So
were you able to put Midwest Skies songs on your MySpace profile? Were you able
yeah.
to?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Oh man, those are the days.
And the first time we ever recorded in like a real studio, we went to Chicago and recorded with Martin Atkins.
Why Chicago?
A lot of really cool bands were blowing up out of the Chicago area.
Sweet.
It's like 2.5-3 hours from here. Like, let's go. Like,
sweet.
And it's kind of cool. We've always enjoyed the idea of like being able to record in a different location. So it's like an adventure too. Like,
yeah, it's an experience.
Fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we recorded 4 songs over 2 days. And I mean, the quality wasn't super great. It was like this weird like Weekender package deal that we got offered, and it was like you get like 50 t-shirts in like 2 different designs, and then you get like 100 CDs with like your recorded stuff on there for like, I don't know, $1,100 or something like that.
Does any content on this first CD exist that I know that we play still?
Yeah. We did Easier This Time Around.
That was written all the way back then?
Yeah. Easier was written back in 2009.
That's wild.
That was like, I wrote that song after meeting, I forgot the name of the band. I think they were from like the Detroit area at the time. They were like friends of friends, and they came out to a party, and I listened to some of their music. We kind of jammed with these guys, and I was like, man, these guys are cool as hell. Like, they're a real band. Like, they had the look down. Their music was really good. And I was like, I want that. So I was actually ending a really long relationship at the time. And that's kind of where I started writing the lyrics behind it. Like, honestly, it's like, it's one of my favorite songs that I've ever written. And I also make the joke a lot on stage, because we usually end with Easier. Say, right. This song was written back in 2009 when I peaked as a songwriter. Because it's okay. Like one of the first like real songs that I ever wrote.
I didn't know that was built into your little brain script there. That's funny. Because I do, now you saying that, you do say that often at the show.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is a great ender. I mean, I'm always, of course, happy to do the Blink-182 comparison, but it's sort of like why they always pretty much always end on like All the Small Things or Damn It. Like, it's not just the root of the nostalgia of the song. It's like when that drive first existed, like when the drive was at its highest for like, this is a new venture. The creativity of how we write songs is like, that's always going to stick, is like, oh, that was a pretty good, genuine representation of myself.
Yeah.
So that's cool to know. I didn't know it was all the way back then.
And it was interesting because we always kind of like build ourselves as a pop punk band, but like the kind of music that we were writing when we first started wasn't anything like you know, like a lot of pop punk bands when they're first starting out, they're writing stuff like you would hear on like Cheshire Cat, like that's that type of pop punk. Like we were never,
what is it? It's not San Diego, but that type of whatever the that it was just whatever.
Like, that was never really our style. Like going into it, we kind of liked, you know, some of like the darker sounding stuff. You know, like super into like 4 Year Strong and Rise Against and stuff like that at the time. Yeah, what was where are we going with this?
Who knows, man?
You're just going off on a tangent now.
That's the beauty of the podcast. It's really funny. I'm actually listening to a few different podcasts who are all cognizantly aware of like when things get quiet, everybody else goes like, "So what else is going on?" Like that's when you know they're like, "Ah, shit." Well, just okay. So that was kind of your first move is like going out to Chicago, doing this CD.
Right.
But at a certain point, it wasn't just making music; it was also like touring, performing, trying to make that a steady, constant thing. Like, how did booking shows? Well, just tell me a little bit about the first early days of like trying to get show after show.
So when we decided we were going to take this seriously, start like pouring some money into this and, you know, taking it as far as we could, we decided, obviously, more than anything, we have to finish and graduate college.
Yeah.
Because the last thing our parents are going to be supportive about is us quitting when we're so close to being finished with school.
Dropping to play music. Out of college.
Yeah.
Not just a couple of music, not just a couple of like musicians either. A couple of frat boys dropping out to make punk music. You're not just like, I have the chance to go overseas and play the cello in an orchestra.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I think I want to go to Chicago and spend all my music or money on music.
Yeah. So we actually did an interview with the Grand Rapids Press with John Sinkovics, who you know owns Local Spins, and that was kind of like his, like he had a thing called Local Spins that was in the paper, and like he wrote a little article about us, and you know we got to go out and like do photos with the photographer too to have that, and I have that like framed somewhere, and it said like Midwest guys ready for takeoff. And
sweet.
And the whole thing was kind of talking about how, like, you know, we're like finishing college and now we're gonna chase this dream for a while. That's and rad. We haven't really talked to our parents about what our plan was post college. So, like, when that came out, it's kind of like, oh, well, when we finish college, we're gonna tour as much as we can now.
So that was your announcement, is like somebody leaked to it's like it was a press leak that like your children are dropping out of college or not dropping out of college, but
so we're just like, all right, let's do this. And like luckily, you know, all of our parents were super supportive of it. The main thing was like, you know, as long as we had jobs and we could support ourselves, like by all means keep chasing the dream. And you know, we worked crappy jobs. We all moved into a house together, and that made stuff a lot easier for us. Because, like, when you're living together, you kind of know, like, you know, what's going to piss that person off. So, like, we're not necessarily stepping on eggshells, but we learn to, like, you know, give each other space when we have to. And, like, we see, like, a lot of bands at butt heads like that.
Yeah.
And we were lucky because it's like, not only do we live together, but like we're going to be sleeping in a van together like for weeks on end. So
a quick question about the living together thing. When you initially start, like, well, I guess when you live together, how does practicing go? Is it just like somebody's jamming and then somebody joins in and then somebody else joins in? Or is it like, even though we live together, we do practice at this time every day? Or like,
yeah, we would try and set a time to do practice, like, a couple times a week. Typically, it was around, like, 7 in the evening. It's like, I remember at the time I was working overnights at a hotel. So we'd jam from, like, you know, like 7 to 9 or something like that.
Brutal, also. Yeah. God, overnights at a hotel.
Yeah. Ooh. But, I mean, it worked out nicely. We had, like, we built a little stage downstairs in our basement, because like we did like a lot of house shows and stuff too. But like we always had our practice space set up, so it was literally just like walk downstairs, flip on the amps, and let's go.
Sweet. That's kind of convenient. Because, like, I mean, we do every Tuesday, and of course everybody's older, has a little bit of a different situation, especially now these days, and we will get into, again, the fatherhood of it all. But, like, knowing that Tuesdays are coming is a really exciting prospect, but also when, like, Friday or Saturday rolls around, and I'm like, damn, I got some ideas I would love to hammer out, I still got to wait 3 or 4 more days. It's like, oh, God, especially as a drummer, not to take the pity, but I live in a duplex here. So even if I had the drum set here, I couldn't play it. So it's like, I have to stay sharp on the practice pad, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. It always came in handy because, like, all of us, when we would demo out stuff, like, everybody had their own, like, MacBooks and, like,
sweet
little cheap recording interfaces, so we would just like demo stuff out like that and like just show each other in person, like bring it to practice or just like email it so everybody has it and stuff like that. So that's, we right, didn't necessarily, even though we had the convenience of being able to just like go downstairs and jam, we would always just kind of like prefer to like record ideas on our laptops before actually going, yeah, downstairs.
Well, and if you make it all about like all day every day about like, we live together, we write together, we practice together, we perform together, we drive together, like, you're gonna get sick of each other.
Yeah.
You can't, it just can't work that way. So I feel like between now that we're talking about and the next stage that I'll get to is kind of, yeah, where we crossed paths. So probably around, I think it was 2012, between 2012 and 2014, I'm sure we played 2 to 4 shows together, and they were probably all in Kalkaska, because that's just the only shows that we could book at the time, because we were in Cadillac and they were willing to have us, so we were happy to do it. Then at a certain point, what I would deem as, especially at the time, one of the more aspirational goals of any band, you guys managed to end up playing the Ernie Ball stage at Warped Tour. How does that come across your desk? How are you able to, first of all, book it, but then like, at what point in the journey was this? Was this like a total surprise? Had you done a bunch of shows leading up to this?
This one was actually a huge surprise, because every year they would do that, like, you know, vote for this band to play the,
yes, yeah, and we lost, and like, all the time. We tried so hard.
Yeah, that one was rough, because it's like, how do you convince, you know, all of your friends and family to continuously vote for you every day? Like, it's pretty annoying. And, yep, and it sucks that that was like the route to take. And we know, like, I think like the first year we tried that, there were bands with like, you know, thousands and thousands of votes. And it's like, I know a lot of them got caught using bots,
yep,
and stuff like that. So they would like slowly change things about it every year. And it was 2013 or 2014 when we played.
It had to be right around there, because I remember it was like right after we played together at that Hawthorne Heights show. It was like, holy shit, those guys we just played with are over at Warped Tour now.
It was like 5:30 in the afternoon. I'm driving home from work, and I get a call from an unknown number. Of course, I answered it, and they said, hey, this is so-and-so with...
it was already a bold move, yeah, answering the unknown caller.
Yeah. This is, you know, 2013... That's when I still had, yeah, my ringtone on. It wasn't on silent.
Sure.
Yeah. But like, I answered. Before
it was impossible to get a hold of you.
Yeah. But it was crazy. Like, they said, hi, we're so-and-so with blah, 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 blah. We pick like, I think it was like the top 5 bands from every city that win the contest to like play the Ernie Ball stage.
Sweet.
And they're like, we want to let you guys know that you were actually number 6. And we're like, fuck.
Ah, don't even call me at that, yeah, point.
He's like, but one of the bands isn't able to do it. Can you guys play Warped Tour tomorrow? I know this is super last minute. And I was like, yes, absolutely. Please email me all the details. And they said, great, we'll send things over right away. I was like, perfect. I immediately get off the phone, call up Ryan and Josh. I was like, guys, call into work tomorrow. We're playing Warped Tour.
Dude.
And they're like, what? I was like, I'll explain everything when I get home. And I kind of like told them the gist of everything.
And you're, like, you're all living together still at this point.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Okay. You are. Yeah. You are.
And we're like, this is actually happening. Like, cause we had gone to Warped Tour, you know, like for a few years where we would go out and promote our music. You know, like a lot of bands would have
hand out
music
the CDs, on, like, dude.
Hand out the CDs.
I went to Ed Sheeran and handed out Live for Tomorrow CDs. That's how it's done, dude. I get
it. Like our most successful one, our first year doing that, we bought, I think, like 2,000 blue wristbands that said Midwest Guys, and we're just shooting them out into the crowds.
I know the wristbands you're talking about. I think I might have one somewhere.
Like, I remember, like, we're, like, checking our social traffic, and we're checking on Twitter, and we see a bunch of people, like, tweeting from, like, the Warped Tour, like, using the hashtags for that. They're like, what the hell is a Midwest Skies? And I was just like, fuck, we didn't put any contact info on this. That was stupid.
Amazing, amazing.
So the next year, we did the same thing, our blue wristbands.
What the hell is a Midwest Skies?
We had, like, a very specific, like, I think it was, like, PMS 308, like, our Pantone color for, like, the blue that we used on everything.
Nice.
And we put Midwest Skies, and then we put a link to our Facebook on the back of the wristband.
It's hilarious.
We had them embossed with black, so you could read it easier, too. And then that
was... it's not worth it. Go ahead.
I say that one, we noticed like a huge uptick in traffic where people were like, they could actually find us now. It wasn't just like, what the hell is Midwest Guys? And then another year we were doing the same thing. Again, these are all years where we didn't get to play. So we're holding up like signs for like our music.
This is guerrilla marketing.
Yeah. And we have a backpack full of spray sunblock. And the way we would do it, we would approach people at Warped Tour like, here, check out our music, and while you're doing that, we'll spray you with some sunblock. That way you don't get sunburned. And, like, people love that. So, like, we would do that to a few people, and they were like, this is actually a really cool idea. I like your guys' music. And they'd come find us, like, later on and bring their friends and be like, hey, can they get some sunblock? And I want them to check out your music. And we're like, yeah, absolutely. So we're spraying people down. They're, like, jamming to our music, and we'd give them a demo and stuff like that.
Genius, bro.
And because like everybody was just like passing out flyers or CDs.
That's how it's done.
It's like, what's one thing we wanted to do? Well, we can't bring in like thousands of bottles of water.
Right.
It's like, but I remember like feeling like absolute dog shit from being in the sun all day the past couple years. Like people are sunburnt. Like, let's at least help them out this way.
Hell yeah.
And like it was our most successful form of marketing that we did there.
This is Wish You Were Here days, correct?
No, this was...
Ghost of 46 still?
Yeah, this is Ghost of 46.
Okay.
I don't when think...
Wish You Were Here came out... You guys were playing... When? Go ahead.
Oh, Wish You Were Here came out September 2013.
Yeah, and that Christmas show was December of 2013. So you guys were just releasing that music then when we played together. That's what I was remembering. So if this is all right beforehand. Oh, yeah. Okay. I see now. I was going to say, when you played Warped Tour, Wish You Were Here was out. But by the time you're marketing things, it's Ghost of 46.
Right.
I'm with you.
But, yeah, and then, like, when we got to play Warped, it was, like, absolutely unreal.
So what's the drive like? Like, when you're, like, on your way to Detroit?
I think, like, load-in was, like, super early in the morning. We're all, like... Barely got
and you get the call in the morning the day before?
No, at night. It was 5:30 in the afternoon.
And so they were like, can you show up to Detroit and play, but be here early morning to load
in? Yeah, I think we had to be there at like 8 in the morning for like check-in and load-in and stuff. And, you know, obviously, like, we didn't sleep much that night. We were so excited just, like, packing up everything and, like, making sure, you know, everything was good to go. And... I remember when we got there, our girlfriends at the time, they were planning on coming out and just like buying tickets like the day of. And when I went in to check in to get wristbands and stuff for the band, they said, how many is in your band? And I said, 7.
Nice.
Like, we were a 3-piece, but it was like we brought our buddy Justin on with us, who was like always helping us with like merch and lights and stuff like that. So really we needed 4, but then I was like, I can get our girlfriends in too. So we got 7 wristbands. I called them up like, hey, meet me over by this fence, gave them the wristbands.
Dude, what a rock star. Yeah. I can get you in, don't worry, I'm in the band.
It's like, there was security was not very good, back then.
Nah.
It's like they didn't even bother checking. They were like, yeah, Midwest guys, we need 7 wristbands. They're like, okay, yeah, here you go.
Well, I mean, like, I feel like also having a last minute entry in, like, yeah, you should be able to negotiate that down anyway.
Yeah. And then we found out, like, they gave us the wrong wristbands for, like, the band. So, like, we ended up having, like, our 3 extra plus, like, we needed to get, like, the, like, performance.
Yeah, so yeah, they were all just...
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing.
But I remember that show was, like, really cool because we'd become close friends with a band out of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania at the time called Last in Line. And they were, like, easycore, metalcore. They had, like, the same producer as August Burns Red.
Yeah, I'm also shit with genres, so who knows.
Like, super talented guys. And I remember their guitarist at the time was slinging merch for... I want to say, I honestly can't remember.
Bah.
It was like another big band from that area. So like he was on Warped all summer and it was like, hey, we're playing at this time at the Ernie Ball stage. So like, if you look at some of the videos on YouTube, you can see like him and our buddy Justin standing behind the amps, like Sweet. During our set. And it was pretty cool being able to see friends from like states away that like came out to enjoy our set.
I feel like the video I remember was you guys playing My Own Worst Enemy at Warped. That's what I remember seeing and being like, what? Midwest Skies played Warped? Because there was no real announcement. It was because even you didn't know.
Yeah. It wasn't like literally like as soon as I got home, explained everything to the guys. I'm like putting together really fast like graphics just so we could share them on like Facebook and stuff.
Hell yeah.
Oh, God, that was like... That was insane. I was actually, like, I was kind of bummed. Like, I didn't get to stick around.
Oh, no.
Late in the evening. It's like, I was actually DJing a wedding the next day.
What?
So, I had to leave early. And all the guys were telling me about, like, the, like, barbecue at the end of the night where they got to, like, hang out with the other bands. And I was, like, so fucking jealous. I was
Dang, dude. Yeah, that's, like, not... That, I mean, performing is one thing. But also, like, yeah, hanging out with everyone afterwards. That's not the thing to miss.
Yeah. But, I mean, honestly, it was, like... It was so much fun. It was the fastest 25 minutes of my life.
Like, oh, just a 25-minute set.
Yeah. It was, like, you literally blink and then the set's over. And it's just, like, sure. Damn.
And then everybody's filing out and heading over to another band. And
yeah. But, like, the crowd that we had was insane. Like, I wasn't anticipating a crowd, you know, even a quarter of the size that we had out there.
Sweet.
Because we had seen some of the other local bands that were playing to, like, you know, 5 or 6 people. And I was like...
Oh, that happens like, out at Warped? Yeah. Like, you'll find stages that have that few people?
Yeah. And I was just like, I'd be happy if we played to, like, 10 people. And, like, we probably played to, like, at least 100.
Sweet.
Like, it was nuts.
I didn't realize that you would get stages that have that few people in attendance.
Yeah, I mean, whenever you have, like, so many good bands playing at the same time.
Right.
Like, it's really wanted to see Bowling for Soup, and they were playing the same time as us on another stage, so I was like...
That's kind of crazy to say, though, like, we're right around the corner, Bowling for Soup is playing right behind us.
Yeah.
Don't worry about
like,
it.
A Skylit Drive was, like, coming up next on our stage.
Crazy.
So, just like, yeah... So it was a cool experience.
Of course, that is what is considered a peak. There's been many peaks and valleys, of course, with Midwest Skies members leaving, members coming in. And without really outing anybody's personal stories behind leaving, other than your own, what has it been like for you now that you are the only original member of Midwest Skies? And how? Well, first of all, how long has it been at this point? I mean, you've been the only original member for...
Let's see.
Josh left maybe 5 years ago, more than that?
I think he left in 2016.
Oh, wow. So that was a long time ago.
And Yiki left in 2015. So...
So this is, I mean, a year or two after Warp then. All right, y'all. If you're watching the video version, see that skull? See this? This is not a punk house, it's a punk home banner. All of these things are available at catandcrew.com. That's right, they're the first sponsors. Catandcrew.com. Enter the promo code Monday, it's Monday, M-U-N-D-A-Y, to receive 10% off of your final
purchase. You can get those koozies. You can get banners. You can get earrings. You can get coasters. You can get skull planters. I think it's really cool that they decided to give ADH Deep Dive listeners an exclusive deal. Because, you know, it's cool that we're building a little audience here and that you guys get to have some sort of special perks that nobody else gets. So if you aren't familiar with it yet, go to catandcrew.com, enter the promo code Monday, M-U-N-D-A-Y at checkout, get 10% off your final order. Okay, back to the show.
Yeah, I think like 2 years after. So we were finishing out the logistics of a tour. We were going on just like a small run with this band from La Crosse, Wisconsin called Of The Fact. And I remember...
Quick thing. What is your relationship to touring at this point? I mean, had you done multiple... Yeah,
we were probably touring, like, you know, at least two or three times a year. Plus, we're playing, like, you know, five shows minimum a month.
And, sweet.
Like, we're always just, like, on the road as much as we can be, you know, while still being able to, like, pay our bills.
Right.
And I know, like, we kind of reached the point where, like, the business side of being in a band overtook the creative side of being in a band. And I remember Yuki talking with us before we left for this tour. It's like, hey, I just want to let you guys know that, like, I'm just not feeling this anymore. Like, I'm, like, getting burned out, and I don't want to, like... He didn't want to leave us with just, like, a bunch of, like, holes to fill. So he's right. Like, I'm going to finish out every tour and every show that we have booked right now, because I'm not going to leave you guys hanging. But I want you to know, like, moving forward, like, once we, you know, you guys book more shows and stuff like that, like, I'm going to be stepping back from the band. And, you know, we're still, like, you know, he's still, like, my best friend.
Sure.
There was no animosity there. It's like, I get it. Like, it had gotten so exhausting at that point where... We're just like, we didn't have really any time to, like, write new music. It was always just like, we always have a show to play and we don't have time to write because we're working, we're sleeping, or we're rehearsing for another tour or another weekender. And, you know,
were the shows at the time like work? I mean, first of all, were you being paid for shows? Was it sustainable in that regard, or was it just for exposure at that point that you guys were playing?
We would make enough, like, we'd probably get paid, like, enough for gas at these shows, plus, like, we'd have, like, merch sales and stuff like that. But it wasn't like, oh, we're making decent money. Like, we were still struggling,
right?
And, like, even, you know, we're buying, like, merch out of our own pockets to, like, cause we didn't have enough in the band fund to, like, pay for a lot of these things. And I remember, yeah, when he said he was done, I was so broke at the time, but the van was in Yiki's name. We went down to the Secretary of State, and when we switched everything, he paid the taxes on it for me because I couldn't afford it. Brutal. Like, what, he put it in my name? Yeah. But, like, he was always, like, super supportive and, like, wanting to keep it going. And he's like, now, like, the van is in your name. Like, you guys are good. Like, I have no ties to anything, but I will help out anytime you guys need it. And we didn't really have any shows we were trying to book after that. Like, once he finished out all the tours and shows that we did have booked, we're like, well, what do we do now? And it was just kind of like, okay, well, maybe we'll just take some time. We'll step back for a minute. I ended up playing, like, a ton of, like, solo acoustic shows, like,
yep,
all over the state.
Which is another show I ended up crossing paths with you. We did an acoustic show with Say We Can Fly. That's what it was. Also in Kalkaska.
And it was like, I know the acoustic thing was, like, fairly big at the time, and I was like, well, maybe I'll just kind of, like, do this for a little while. But it's like, man, I miss, like, the electricity of, like, a full band on stage. And then we ended up recruiting our buddy Mitch, who was in the like acoustic pop duo 12-track radio. And he hadn't done anything musically in a while, and he was looking to get back into things. He's like, well, we need a bassist and like another vocalist. Like, would you be down? And we rehearsed together, like jammed a few times, and it was like, it felt like it was a good fit. And then we wrote and recorded Familiar Faces. That one we did with Nick Diener.
Freaking jam.
Yeah. And it was one like...
One of my favorites of the whole set.
I remember we recorded that in February. It was like on Nick's birthday. I was like, are you sure you want to record us on your birthday? And he's like, yeah, I'm not doing anything until my wife gets home from work. So like we can just like knock out all the tracking in a day. So we drove out there, and I remember I was like super sick at the time. So like recording vocals took forever because I'm like trying to sing without coughing. And it was like, oh, it was a pain in the ass. But like,
Are you on vocals in Familiar Faces?
Yeah.
Where?
The first verse.
Never mind. Yeah, you're right.
Second verse.
I'm just also picturing now Kyle singing that. I forget that that's not Kyle's song either. But go ahead.
Yeah, and then we went on a tour with two other Michigan bands, and I think it was like two other Michigan bands and like one RSA band maybe. And that one was like, it was a rough tour because again I was sick, and it was still like,
you're very, always fucking sick, bro. Dude, what and it going was on with you.
It was so cold, and I'd be like freezing in the van. I remember like one night we were sleeping in a Walmart parking lot on this tour, and I was so miserable. Like I went inside just to buy some like cough drops and NyQuil, and I slept in the bathroom because it was warm.
God.
Yeah. It was a rough tour. And when we got back from that, we're like, okay, maybe we should start writing some more music now. And things weren't like super great. Mitch ended up stepping away from the band because he had like an opportunity out in Chicago, so he ended up moving out to Chicago. And once again we're like, okay, well I can try and recruit some people and we can figure something out. And then that's when I could tell, you know, especially with that like last tour with Mitch, like Josh's whole demeanor changed. And I told him, I was like, hey, man, like, I noticed that you're just like, it looks like your heart's not in this anymore. And he was like super happy that I had approached him about that because he was worried about saying anything to me. I was like,
yeah,
you know, it's fine. Like, we're still going to be friends. Like, you know, this isn't for everybody. And, you know, you put in many years into this, and I can see you're just like burnt out. And you're not feeling it anymore. And that's fine. So, I mean, we're still like, you know, really, really close friends. And when he left, I was like, okay, I can either try and rebuild this or do the acoustic thing some more. I did the acoustic thing a little bit more.
So right there. That actually leads me into my next point, real fast. Was there at any point a moment where you're like, well, I suppose Midwest Skies is done?
No.
Never.
I hated my day job so much, and I was like, this is my only escape. And it's
not
still,
just music, Midwest Skies,
right? And it's like my baby. Like, mm-hmm. I have worked so hard on this thing for so many years, and regardless of what form it's going to take, like, I always wanted to be in existence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I decided, like, I'll just do this kind of like solo for a little bit until I can, you know, rebuild the team. And I've reached out to a few. I remember like my buddy Zach, who was in the band It's a Secret and
Oh, I was gonna say, so Harper. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's fine.
I had been like joking around with him when Josh said he was like ready to be done. I was like, hey, you want to join my band? And like, we'd always kind of joked about that because like, I've always been a huge fan of his. Like, he's super talented musician. Mm-hmm. And Josh's last show was when we opened for Neck Deep.
Oh, what? At the intersection. That happened?
And that was his final show. And
what a show to go out on.
Yeah. After our set.
I didn't know that happened.
I remember Zach came up to the merch table. He's like, I'm ready to join the band.
Hell yeah.
And I was like, do not fuck with me right now. He's like, no, I'm serious. I was like, beautiful.
Sweet.
We can keep this thing going.
Sweet.
Actually, Yiki's last show with us was at the intersection opening for the Ataris, which was cool because our first big show was opening for the Ataris in 2010.
But also,
so it's kind of,
I just want to stipulate that if we ever book a show at the intersection, that will be my last. Sorry.
You better hope it's a good band. No, that one was like, it was a ton of fun playing that show. And then we had like, you know, my buddy Sam, who was in Maybe Next Time, filling in on lead guitar.
Wait, and that's not Sam on Familiar Faces that I'm now putting together. I don't know his voice, but I've only attributed the name Sam with being someone else who filled in the band. So I didn't know that wasn't him on Familiar Faces. So that's the other guy. That's, what's his name?
That was Mitch.
That's Mitch.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
It's all coming together.
We were still a 3-piece then. And then this is when I like wanted to build it into a 4-piece. I was like, well, I'm always like writing and recording these like lead parts for, you know, our EPs, but like never play them live. So I told Sam, like, I'd love to have you on and you can make up whatever leads you want for these songs. Like, you don't have to play what I wrote. Cause he's like a really good guitarist and I know he'd come up with some like really cool stuff. And we had buddy Eric Tim, who was like helping me out on a lot of acoustic shows. Cause he was doing acoustic stuff.
He was at the Say We Can Fly show. That's the name. I was looking for that to come up. Yeah.
So like he was playing bass for us at the time and doing some vocals. So we were a 4-piece for a while, where it was me, Eric, Sam, and Zach. And then,
oh, what is that like getting that many schedules together? Because first of all, one of the beauties that we've kind of talked about with the three of us is that, I mean, you two live right around the corner from each other. First of all, I only live 15, 20 minutes away. Knowing that we do it every Tuesday, it's really not hard to get three people together. What's it like at that point, especially now that you don't have the history with all of these people, and now there's new dynamics in the band towards writing and creating?
There was no regular like time where we rehearsed. It was always like the day before a show.
Ooh.
Let's try and find a place where we can get together, run through the set.
Brutal.
That's how it was.
Man, I don't know what we would do without those Tuesday practices. It's the only reason we sound tight sometimes.
It sucked. I mean, I remember in 2017, like I think our first big show as a 4-piece was opening for 4 Year Strong at the intersection.
Stop. How did this happen?
That was a St. Paddy's Day show. That was so much fun. And I thought we did like pretty well. You know, we all had a lot of fun on stage and I was like, cool. Like, we're all riding the high of like a really good show.
Sweet.
It's like, let's see if maybe we could like turn this into like possible new music. And I think at that time, we ended up going, like we put together a few ideas and we ended up going out to Sandusky to record an EP. And it was just me, Zach, and Sam. And that EP, we never ended up like finishing or releasing. But I remember me and Zach went back like in December of that year to retrack vocals. And we still weren't like super happy with it. And then I think that's when Sam and Eric stepped down.
Okay. Now, quick question. And I guess I won't even say the name because it's not out yet or whatever. Is this where the other song that we're working on was born during that time? During that time? Yep. Okay, with all of them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sweet. All right.
So we didn't really know what we wanted to do because we were pretty much back down to like being a two piece.
Well, and how do you feel at this point? You must feel fucking like again.
It was defeating, but again, like anytime somebody like left the band, there was never any animosity or anything like that. I mean, it was like frustrating,
sure,
but for like my own selfish reasons. But I was like very much understanding. It's like, hey, I get it. Like,
but within that ego, and this is pure projection here, because as you've seen already, I'm band related temper tantrums are built into my DNA, and I don't understand why. I don't know why. But anytime something happens dramatically in the band, I have this innate ability to take things extremely personally. At any point, have you ever felt like that along the way, that like maybe they're leaving because just for whatever reason, like it's never upsetting to you enough to like get to the edge of like doubting yourself? Like, where does it get you?
No, I mean, I think like shortly after Sam had left, he had ended up starting like an indie project,
right?
Called Casa Blue, which was like, it was cool. Like, I got to shoot a music video for them. Like, I like their music. They're all really cool guys. But again, like, we were all like friends in the music scene before they were band members.
Sure.
So it was easier. Like, when they did leave, it's like, oh, well, we can still go back to being friends.
Right.
Like, it wasn't like, okay, like, now you're out of the band, fuck off, we're never talking again. Yeah. It's like, we all stayed, like, good friends. And I remember I had always joked with Kyle, because, like, he was the singer for the band Woodbridge.
Right.
And we had always joked for years. It's like, hey, when are you going to join my band? Hey, when are you going to join my band? And I remember we had planned out a tour with Woodbridge.
Is this how this happens? You just bully people into joining the band?
Yeah.
When are you going to join? Come on, dude. Quit what you're doing and join my thing.
This was like years before when like Josh and Yiki were still in the band. Like, that's when we first met Woodbridge.
Okay.
We actually like first heard about them. Our first show in Saginaw at Hamilton Street Pub, we played to like 20 people, maybe.
Sweet.
And they were telling us like, oh man, this band called Woodbridge had their like album release last night and this place was packed wall to wall. And I'm like, fuck those guys
for doing it the night before.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, I didn't know they were. We ended up meeting them in Kalkaska, actually.
Yep.
Playing a show up there.
Yep. That's where I met them.
And like, we immediately bonded over like Trailer Park Boys.
That checks like, out.
So like, yeah, we became good friends with those guys. We planned out a tour with them. The tour fell through.
Right. But you've got posters.
Yeah. Like, well, with them, like, a couple of their members just, like, backed out. So they ended up only playing the Michigan dates of the tour. And Kyle ended up coming on tour with us and, like, helping us with merch.
Sweet.
And, like, he got to, like, play some acoustic stuff, too.
Oh, he did, like, solo stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And that's where, like, we became, like, closer with Kyle, and then he ended up coming out on, like, I think, like, a couple more tours with us, just, like, helping us out with merch and stuff like that, because, like, his band wasn't touring, and he really loved touring and, like, hanging out with us. So, like, that's how we became, like, so close with him. And then when the opportunity arose, it's like, hey, like, you want to play bass and sing in Midwest Guys after, like, Woodbridge dissolved? And he was living in Saginaw at the time. I was living in Grand Rapids. Zach was living in Muskegon. So I was like, don't worry. Like, it's not going to be a huge commitment right now. We just, like, play shows every once in a while and, like, maybe write some new tunes. And he's like, all right, I'll do it.
Sweet. Immediately receptive to it. No hesitations. Good.
So we back as a three-piece. We're playing shows. You know, again, these are, like, we'll get together the day before we leave for tour or the day before a show to rehearse. Sometimes we wouldn't even get to rehearse.
I cannot imagine that.
It's like, logistically, it was so tough having everybody live in different parts of the state.
Well, yeah.
And, like, we didn't have a practice space. So it was, like, hard enough trying to find a rehearsal space, let alone being able to get everyone together
right
in one room. And around this time, my now wife, who was my fiance at the time, we had just bought a house, and I was like, guys, we have a practice space again.
Oh, you guys were practicing at that house?
We practice, yeah.
I didn't know that.
We got together, we had like moved into the house, not really moved in, like we got all of our crap out of the apartment that, you know,
yeah,
me and Cassie were living
you were
in.
Officially
and
owning the house.
It's like, yeah, and I was like, all right, let's practice our set list because we're leaving for like a tour for 2 weeks. So we got like one solid rehearsal in, and it's like, I felt bad because then it was kind of like leaving Cassie. It's like, hey,
yeah,
good luck.
Happy marriage. You know,
like, cleaning up the apartment and like finishing moving everything in. I'm going to be out on the road for the next couple weeks.
But also just which a quick like, thing. Just so we're aware, publicly state for the record. One of the things that you've also made clear is that unendingly throughout this process, she's been very supportive of Midwest Guys and your ventures into music. Is that correct? Like never been the consideration of like seed power of Midwest Guys over to the marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, I've had, like, girlfriends in the past who were like, yeah, this is cute, but, like, when are you going to get a real job?
Right.
And it's like, I wasn't ready for that yet. It's like, I mean, I have my degree I can fall back on.
Right.
I can be, like, a boring adult anytime. But, like, with Cassie, she's always been, like, such a huge supporter of music, and she's like a huge music fan herself, like
right.
she has way more knowledge on pop punk and punk rock than
hell
I do.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's so great to have like such a supportive person. Like she would always like joke around like, if you ever quit music I'll break up with you. It's like, because she knows like how much it meant to me.
Well, I think,
and
we'll continue, go ahead.
I was just saying, like, just like having that support to be able to like help me keep things going, especially when, you know, I'm at like the lowest of lows with it. And it's like, well, I don't want to hang it up, but like, what other options do I have?
Sure.
And like, she's always there to like kind of give me that push to get out of that funk and keep it moving.
Well, and also now I think is as good a time as any to talk about kind of the new transition into your life outside of the band, and we'll come back to music, of course, but that sort of catches us up to where we are now. We can talk a little bit about how I ended up joining, but I've talked about this on the podcast plenty of times. One of the more recent developments is that I don't know how to say, you have a child now is what I'm trying to say. And first of all, before we even talk about what that's done for like your own internal psyche and music going forward, can you talk a little bit about the chaos of the show that was happening at that point when like you didn't know if it was or was not going to happen? Do you remember that?
Yeah. So,
because that was the biggest show I had always, just to spoil the story a little bit, it was a Pyramid Scheme show, but James will talk about it more specifically. I had always wanted to play the Pyramid Scheme. It's not even that crazy of a venue. It's just something I heard about, knowing about the Grand Rapids music scene. I always wanted to play. And when we booked it, I was so hyped. And then there was a slight possibility that James couldn't do it. So go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
So the show had been booked for a while, and I think like a couple of the dates ended up getting changed. It was supposed to be in like early February, and then it got moved to like February 25th.
Was that when it was? No, we dropped Come Back For Me in March, and
it was February 20-something.
We dropped Come Back For Me in March, and that had already been, we were already selling merch for that at that show.
Right.
Unless it was just the music video that was coming out.
Yeah,
because
we released the song February 13th.
There it is. Okay.
Okay. So my daughter was born. She was due the day before the show. And to get things in order, like, I wanted to make sure, like, that we were still able to play this show. And the only option, like, dropping the show was not an option. It's like,
which was, like, that's humble of you. I mean, some people could say, like, it's just, I mean, especially we're a three-person band. One person can't make it, show's not happening.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, we're going to make this happen. We had Zach, who is an amazing guitarist and singer.
Yep.
I was like, hey, is there any chance who you could learn our set?
The aforementioned Zach, who was filling in on drums at this point, up until I joined.
Right. He stepped back to, you know, do the Dave Grohl thing.
Yeah.
Like, singing and playing guitar in a band. Thing. Yeah. And, like, he's, dude's so talented. Yeah. And it's like, I get it. He was drumming for, like, a million bands and stuff at the time. And, like, I don't know, playing guitar and singing is just a lot of fun.
I get it.
And
you feel a little trapped back there, bro. You do. You do sometimes.
But it's fun to see him and, like, that. Like, I mean, I had him play guitar at my wedding.
Cool.
Like, he played all the music for the ceremony.
That's right, you told me that. I forgot about that.
So he agreed, and he was very familiar with everything except for, like, our new song.
He came to maybe three practices leading up to that?
I think just two.
I thought it was three. It could have been, like, I thought it was, like, the week before, and then he did the day before, and then whatever. He did not enough practices for me to feel comfortable, but he nailed it.
So, like, the stipulation was, if my daughter arrives late, then I wouldn't be able to play the show. Or if my wife was still pregnant but not in labor the day of the show, she would come to the show.
Right.
And if she happened to go into labor while we were at the show, we're only a few blocks from the hospital.
Right. Finish the set, and you can walk around the corner.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's, like, one option. Or if we were in the hospital because the baby had already come, then he was going to fill in for me. Mm-hmm. So,
but there was the possibility of her having the baby the night before and then you coming to play the show the day after.
Yes. Yeah. It wasn't her favorite.
No, that was not option. A strong consideration. But I'm just saying all contingency plans were made to ensure that this show still happened.
Right. We had multiple options ready to go. And my daughter was born a few days early. So she was born on the 21st. Mm-hmm. And we had that, like, 4-day gap where I think we stayed at the hospital for a couple nights. And it was a very sleep deprived week.
And baby came home before.
Yeah. Okay. Before the show. Okay. Like, I remember going into that show on, like, 2 hours of sleep.
Yep.
I was just, like, drained, and we were at the venue for, like, 8 hours.
Yeah, dude.
Like, I finally got out of there around, like, 12:30.
Yep.
Like, I remember, like, asking, you know, some of the other bands that were just, like, finishing loading out, because I had just finished loading up some stuff. I was like, you guys want some help? They're like, no, go home. You got a baby, dude. You're tired. Yep. And I was like, all right, thanks so much for having us out. Which, this was so much fun.
Which, even before the baby talk here, you and I were actually talking about this at practice yesterday. We've seen more people wearing our merch that when we talk to them, like, out in the wild, we're like, how'd you hear about us? They're like, oh, I got this at the Pyramid Scheme show. Like, we saw plenty of people at the Blink-182 show, which I think I talked about this on the podcast, wearing the shirt. Some of them were from bands that we knew. But, yeah, again, Pyramid Scheme. So you guys at the Pyramid Scheme in Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
Like, just a picture-perfect experience.
Yeah, that was such a fun
show. And we rocked it, dude. That was such a good show. Yeah. At least to my memory.
I mean, it was a...
I was kind of drunk.
I was just like... I was so loopy. Yeah. So tired. But, like, I was just, like, riding the high of, like, you know, having... You know, Cassie was doing great. Mm-hmm. And the baby was healthy. And I was just, like, so happy. I was like, okay, I've entered a new phase of my life. Let's see what band life is going to be like for a dad now.
And it was, because I've also, just one more thing on the band side, it was the first single that Midwest Guys had dropped since 2016. Like, new music was coming out. Like, we were rehearsing every Tuesday. Things had started to get really tight. New merch was coming. Like, we were riding a high.
Yeah, and it's like, it's kind of crazy. This is, like, kind of like the busiest we've been in, like, 7 or so years. Not so much with, like, playing shows and touring and stuff, but, like, finally getting new music written and recorded. And It's been a very interesting experience navigating fatherhood and like balancing work and the band and everything. But honestly, like it's been nice. I mean, I've had so many friends who ended up having kids and then they just like quit playing music. They're yep. like, I'm done. You know, like I don't have time to do it anymore.
Which like, is one of those things that from your perspective, like you can sympathize with, you can understand yeah, like it's too much now.
I get it. It's exhausting. Yep. Like having a full plate. It's like, you got to keep this little human being alive, yep. but you also got to pay your bills.
Well, and on top of that, and you're also doing the freelance stuff, which we either can or can't get into, but we'll do that in a moment if we do. I just mean on top of that, it's not like you have your steady 9 to 5 and then you come home and then you practice or whatever. Like operating on a freelance venture means you work when you are able to find the jobs. Same thing with the band. We play when we can find the gigs, and then fatherhood right. is the job.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I'm with her the majority of the day. I'll occasionally get like, you know, my sister or mother-in-law to babysit mm-hmm. where I can try and get some stuff done, like get caught up on some editing or like on Tuesdays be able to have, you know, rehearsal.
Well, and because not to out her anyway, but your wife works during the day. Yeah. So like you have to be home.
Yeah. Right. Which I mean, it's nice. I always joke about like it's nice being a stay-at-home dad.
Yeah.
But like I had always joked about that before, but like really it is really nice. I mean, I do have the luxury of working for myself.
Yep.
So it's nice that I haven't quite found that balance yet between, you know, being a dad and working.
Yeah.
It's always going to shift. Like I'm going to be a dad before all the work. Which isn't great because, you know, I have a lot of clients that I need to get work done for. Yeah. But, I mean, at the end of the day, like, being able to juggle all three of these things, it's a challenge, but it's rewarding. And it always kind of bums me out when I see a lot of friends that end up moving towards, you know, parenthood, and they just give up on music. And it's like, you can still do music in some capacity. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, as busy as it used to be.
Well, and it's not like, even just, I feel like there are names in my head that are popping up as you say that, because like some of the most heartbreaking ending separations of friendships that I've had have unfortunately fallen apart because of them slipping into parenthood, which is a thing that you can't, again, I have no ill will, or I don't feel any will to, you understand what I'm trying to say. I'm slipping on my words. But you can almost see, especially in like your closest friends, this initial excitement of like, I'm a dad. It slowly sucks the life out of them. And then they think that they have to give up on their creative pursuits so that they can focus on being a father. But then at the same time, it's like, if you don't do anything to fulfill you creatively while you're a parent, you'll grow to resent your kid and your marriage, because like it acts as like a vice that is responsible for taking away your time when you really can have both. Now I'm not a parent. I of course can't empathize in that way, but like it makes me more sad than anything when people think that they have to give up on their art to be a parent.
Yeah, it's honestly like having this creative outlet is it's a lifesaver.
Yeah.
Like it's keeping me from going crazy. Like I can be so bogged down with like, you know, editing commercial work or wedding films that like I'll easily get burned out because it's like I'm either being a dad or I'm plopped down in front of the computer editing. But then like because we get to rehearse every Tuesday, I have that like musical creative outlet. Plus, you know, I like playing acoustic guitar for my daughter.
Yeah.
Just like while she's just like hanging around, and it's like cool, I still get to do something fun musically, get to introduce her to some fun yep. music. And like we sit around in the mornings, you know, before her morning nap, and we'll watch music videos.
So cool.
And yeah, I mean, she's not a fan of everything, but
she's only into the hardcore shit. She doesn't really like yeah. that pop punk.
She just wants to mosh until it's time for a nap. Yeah.
This episode is going to come out Monday, the 16th.
Monday.
You know it. I mean, that's what it is, bro. Come on.
Unless you actually are making a joke because you watched the show, in which case I appreciate that. Otherwise, yeah, Monday, the 16th,
which means 2 days from when this is released, the new single comes out, Setback, the latest of a series of singles. And we will get into the work thing. But I think the reason I wanted to bring it up is because this kind of ties into what we were talking about. If you feel like it's too much to share, I'll stop and I'll scrap this part. But since the song is coming out in 2 days, I think maybe we can say what the first line of the song is. I mean, you kind of hear it in the teaser. I just think it applies to what we're talking about. It's every late night, wide awake. Every late night, wide awake, I'm passed out on the floor.
Stressed
out on the floor. I'm at my breaking point, and I can't take it all anymore.
Right.
So I remember the early origins of this song was like, okay, Kyle had a big part or hand in writing Come Back For Me. I've got a single that I brought to the band that I'm kind of working with lyrics. But we wanted this to kind of be like, all right, James, you write about what you know here. And there were some initial issues with like, you know, you are a forgiving person, so you don't have animosity towards these other members in your band. There's nothing angry for you to write about. But the concept that you leaned into was just being exhausted, that there is so much in life.
So Setback deals with being, you know, stressed out, anxiety, being exhausted to the point where you're just like, you're ready to break. And that's kind of where I feel like I was for a very long time, you know, because I'm like, okay, I'm a dad. You got to keep this little human alive. You also have a huge backlog of edits that you need to get done.
Yeah.
And you're nowhere near that.
Bro. I remember how much you had to do leading up to that.
And I have like, I'm still like a husband too, so like I need to like help out, you know, help my wife. I don't want to put her or like put so much on her plate because she already works full time on top of everything. So it's like, okay, I got to get a bunch of stuff done around the house. I have to run a million errands, but I also have all this stuff on my plate every day, and it just seems like I was like digging myself deeper and deeper into a hole with no escape in sight. And that's like the worst headspace you could be in, especially when you're a new dad. It's like, I don't want my daughter, even though she's only, you know, 7 months old, I don't want to be this like ball of stress and anxiety around her. I want her to see me as this like happy, trusting person. And this song was like a great outlet because I remember you guys always kind of like teasing me about this. And like my wife teased me about it too. It's like, I've lived a very privileged life. Like I didn't grow up rich or anything like that. I've just like always had like super supportive parents. I've surrounded myself with like really positive people, and I'm not really like an angry person. You know, I don't really hold grudges or anything like that. So it's like, you know, you guys used to give me shit for it all the time, like
a friendly ribbing.
Yeah, and it's just like, yeah, I mean, like I'm pretty thankful for that. Like, yeah. I remember, you know, Cassie used to joke all the time. She's like, "Well, do you want me to divorce you so you have something to write about?"
Yes, please.
Like, she would just like make jokes like that all the time. She's like, "Yeah, you've lived a pretty privileged life." It's like, yeah, I need to start like putting myself in other people's shoes, like whenever I start writing. But then this one felt like it came so naturally because I was in that headspace. It's like, oh my God, this is what anxiety is. This is what stress is. Like, I used to thrive under pressure and stress, and now I'm just like, oh my God, I want to crawl in a hole and die. So it's nice having this song kind of be that escape for me. It's like, okay, in my head, get it all down on paper, get it recorded into a song, and I feel like that's helped me so much. It's like very therapeutic It's like I don't feel as overwhelmed or stressed or anything like that. But at the time, I didn't really have an outlet for that.
You also didn't have a frame of reference, really, because you had only been a new dad. You're like,
yeah,
I am dealing with the now of which I am buried.
Yeah. And it's just like, but I also had that guilt of like, what the fuck do I have to complain about? Like, things are great for me right now.
Yep.
But at the same time, it's like, yeah, like on the surface, everything's great. But, you know, when you dig a little deeper, it's like, oh, I'm kind of in some shit right now. And I don't want things to get worse.
I think you heard it here, folks. Ignore therapy, write music. Who needs it?
If you can afford therapy, please go to do some therapy.
Also, I'll cede power to you in just a second here, because I'm going to ask this question, and then as you're answering it, I'm going to switch my camera battery around. Yeah, you kind of led into it. There's this mysterious third element of also being a freelance cinematographer, photographer, media guy, of which listeners of this podcast are very familiar with. I think you have a more extensive career in that regard, but I talk about me pursuing that kind of thing all the time on here. Aside from just the music and the fatherhood, what is the, like, talk a little bit about the stress and responsibility of being freelance. Aside from, like, yes, I need to, like, support my family and I want to be able to do the things I want to do, but, like, the immense power and responsibility you have to book your own schedule, to get your own gigs, pay your own bills, or, like, pay yourself out of pocket, buy your new equipment, and still somehow manage to take out your own taxes at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that. And I'll switch my battery while you're doing it.
I have been freelancing just for fun on the side, like, you know, shooting weddings and stuff like that since like 2016. I think I shot my first wedding in like 2011 though. But like, I went to school for film and video. That's what, like, my degree is in film and video productions and advertising and public relations. But obviously, like, right outside of college, we just did the band thing and I didn't really do anything with my degree. I think it was around 2018 when the video work started to pick up a lot more. And that's when I decided, okay, well, I'm going to turn this into a permanent thing. So I, like, got my LLC. I was like a legit business now. And I did that for another year and a half. And I ended up quitting my full-time job a week before the pandemic hit and the world shut down. And nobody could have guessed that was going to happen. But I was just like, I was so miserable at my job that I felt like I was kind of like bringing that home. And I was just like, not a pleasant person to be around, especially like with my wife, who's always been so supportive. And I've just been like kind of a dick. And she knows how miserable I was at this job. She was like, just quit. You can do this full time. So I finally did it because of the big push that I got from her. And
that was the time to do it, too. Right. It's, first of all, it's also crazy to know that that was happening at the same time, because that's when, that is the last tied down W-2 job I had, was right before the pandemic. And then I quit when we got the stimulus checks and I bought more gear. And I was like, I guess it's time.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I didn't know that.
It was so scary. I'm like, okay, well, let's see if I can make this work. And like my wife, she's a math teacher. So she put together like a little spreadsheet and she is like, she's like, okay, this is how much money you need to make per month for us to make this work. Like bare minimum. And it was like $66 or something like that. And I was like, I can definitely do that. Like if I don't get any work for a month, like I can sell stuff and make $66.
Yeah.
So it was like her like doing all this work for me and like giving me this huge push that I needed to finally set out on my own. And I was so lucky that year. I remember having so many friends that are in like the wedding space who had a ton of cancellations and reschedules. And I was like, oh my God, like, what if I have all these weddings that I have booked right now? cancel on me or reschedule. And I was super lucky that the majority of them ended up just doing smaller, like, backyard tent weddings and stuff like that instead of canceling or moving. So it's like, cool. Like, this helps me tremendously. I'm still able to pay my bills. And, yeah, everything just, like, worked out so well for me. And I was just, like, so thankful. But I did end up putting the majority of the money that I made that first year back into the business. Because, like, I wanted to just, like, make it grow as much as possible going into, like, my second year of being a full-time freelancer. And it's kind of been on that, like, uptrend for a while. And then this year, I haven't actively been booking as many gigs because, you know, being a dad and staying at home with the little one is my main priority right now. But I also need to realize that I do have a lot of bills. You know, I got a mortgage. I have a car payment. I have student loans that just started back up.
But so is there a part of you not booking that, like, was built in because of the exhaustion of having too many? Like, you're not doing as many because you had too many?
Yeah. So last year I had booked a lot of work, like weddings and commercial work.
Mm-hmm.
And while my wife was pregnant, I ended up taking on more responsibilities at home so she wouldn't have to do that. And I think that, like, pushed back my, like, editing schedule so much.
Sure.
That I was just, like, I was out shooting the work, but I didn't have enough time to sit there and edit everything that I needed to. And especially with, like, the way my edits are, like, I won't, like, turn in something half-assed to a client or a couple. Like,
you also offer extremely large packages that sort of blows my mind sometimes. That I'm like, why are you doing that much work by yourself?
Yeah, but I get it. I mean, it's tough, but, like, for, like, I mean, with, like, weddings, like, I just want couples to, like, you know, that I want them to get, like, a ton of stuff, and I want them to be able to, like, look back on things and be like, oh my God, I don't remember half this stuff. This is so great to be able to look back on. And we have, like, we don't have this, like, you know, 3-minute highlight film that, like, a lot of videographers offer. It's like,
me. We get to, that's all I offer. Like, 3 to 5.
We get, like, so many things to, like, look back on. And I want them to make them feel like they're getting their money's worth. And, like, that's helped me a ton with, like, word of mouth. Like, they're so impressed that they'll, like, pass along my info to their friends who are getting married. And that was super great. But, yeah, like, all, like, fall and winter, I was just, like, falling so far behind because I was trying to do more around the house. Like, you know, my wife is, like, super pregnant, and I can't have her, like, doing as much, you know. So I think that kind of, like, bit me in the ass a little bit. Whereas, like, if I didn't have that to deal with, it would have been easier to be back on track. But it's nice that, like, this year's been so slow for me that I have been able to, like, kind of get caught up on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And still, like, spend a lot of time with my daughter. And I think, like, next year I'm going to try and increase my workload a little bit, because I think I've, like, almost found that balance that I've been looking for. I'm not quite there yet, but, yeah, the work-life balance is always, like, a constantly evolving thing.
And when it comes to some of that balance, just to include myself selfishly into that, where do you hope, what are your hopes? I mean, maybe this is a cliche question, but, like, what are your hopes versus your expectations of where Midwest Skies, like, give me the 1 year, the 5 year, and the 10 year plan for what you'd like to see. I mean, obviously the ideal thing is, like, oh, I'd love to be a big band and we just do kind of whatever we want. We get to play the big shows and then that's what we do. But with some degree of realism, the 1, the 5, the 10 year, what do you hope?
Honestly, I'd like to get back to the point where we're just kind of, like, maybe touring once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like,
a week, 2 weeks.
Yeah, just like a 1 week tour has been great. Like, we've done that quite a few times. Like, our last tour was in September of 2019, and that one, like, you know, we managed to make our way down to, like, Kentucky, Georgia, Florida, North Carolina. You know, it's like, and it's only in a week, so you're not taking too much time off of work, not right. spending too much time away from everyone. Like, as far as shows go, like, I would like to play more shows, but I do like the fact that things have been slow for us show-wise, so we can make more time for, like, writing and recording new music.
Yep.
So we can go out in support of that new music.
Do you think that, I mean, this is, of course, short-term stuff, obviously. Do we want to talk about how we plan to continue releasing music, or is that kind of just something that will happen?
I feel like that's, there's like a degree of uncertainty there, because right. We don't have like a solid game plan, and it's nice that we're not like on a schedule of like, we need to do this by this date. It's like right. when a song's done, it's done.
Right. And that's sort of what I mean, though. Like,
yeah, it's like we don't want to rush music and put out shit that we're not proud of.
Right. Like, but I just mean the difference between releasing songs versus EP or album. Yeah. Like,
I think
it's not anonymous.
Yeah, I think it's been easier to release things as singles right now because we are taking our time with each song, mm-hmm. and we're only doing one song at a time. It's right. not like how a lot of people do it where they're like, we're going to track, you know, a song a day in the studio for like a week and like put out a 5-song EP or something like that.
Yeah.
This one is nice because we can take our time with it, or like we'll track, you know, drums and maybe guitars one day, and then like bass and then vocals, just stuff like that. And it's like building the songs up piece by piece, not rushing it. That way we can kind of hear like, do we want to change some things?
And it helps to have, we have songs that are ready to be further written. It's not like yeah. nothing has, it's like we only work on the one song and that's it. I feel like it's important for people to know that, like, when we show up, especially since we only do Tuesdays, typically it's like 3 to 4 hours of a practice. First half hour, at least 2/3 of us, and that 1/3 being you, we're getting high. And then that's the first half hour of practice. And then just kind of like warming up a little bit, going down and like playing a few songs from the set, then going into the ones that we feel need work the most, then pretty much playing the set, like whatever we expect our next show to be, running through the set. And then it's like, okay, new stuff. What do you got? What do you want to bring? How do we develop this a little bit further? So there's 2 or 3 other songs that are conceptualized and quote unquote written that aren't being recorded or actively developed because we're working on one new thing at a time.
Right. And I think like once we get these 5 songs released, we'll probably have like physical copies of an EP to sell at shows and stuff like that. But I think for the time being, it's nice being able to like write and release 1 song at a time. Because, I don't know, I just feel like with the way people are consuming music today, if you release, like, a whole EP, people are going to, like, listen to these songs, and they're like, oh, this one's my favorite. Oh, this one seems yep. like it's a filler song.
Yep.
Like, I don't want filler songs.
Well, and a lot of bands release a lot of songs before albums drop. Yeah. So it's like, if we're releasing music, instead of, like, hyping the album, let's just do each song.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, like I said, it's just like, it's nice to be able to take our time with each song as we release it and then like spend time promoting it and playing it and, you know, learning a lot from like, okay, we wrote and recorded this song. We've listened to it 1,000,000 times. What will we do differently on the next one?
Yep.
Versus let's record everything we can as fast as we can and then kind of regret things.
Well, it also helps for building it into the set too, because it's like, let's say we have a 6-song set. 5 of those songs are songs we always play. 1 of those songs is the new song. Now we play that new song. I mean, Come Back For Me especially. Like, we played it so much, we know the song. Now 1 of those other 5 can drop out for this new song or whatever. And then we don't forget all the other music. We still have it ready to go for other shows, but like we can build them into our set to practice them more as well.
Yeah, and it's nice having like so many options to choose from so we can build our set based on what
the vibe,
like a show's lineup is going to be like. Oh, is this one going to be a poppier show? Is this one going to be like a heavier show? And it's like nice having the songs that we can pull from different places and like put together a set list specifically for that show. Versus so that, like, well, we have these six songs, we have to play them no matter what.
Right. So the one-year plan is just refamiliarize ourselves with being able to continue recording while also squeezing in a tour. And then, of course, some local shows. Yeah. 5 years, assuming that it's still the same lineup, assuming that we're still progressing with this, do you have hopes or do you try to stick away from those that far out?
I don't really think too far ahead with it. I think it's just kind of like, it's gotten to the point now where it was like, before we were trying so hard to make it and it being our number one priority. And I mean, like I remember we like signed like a local indie label out of Ann Arbor.
Oh, you did? Like, I didn't know that.
That one didn't like, it didn't work out super well for us because they didn't really know how to market a pop punk band.
Sure.
They just like, they went to our shows and they saw like the way we worked a crowd and like the energy that we had on stage. But like now we're doing this as like not so much the business aspect of things taking over, but more of like the creative aspect of things. And it's like trying to make it fun, like the way it used to be.
Right.
I think like as long as we try and keep it fun and we don't let the business side of things take over, I mean, it could go on until we're too old to play music.
You sent me a video of, I think it was Dave Grohl. Was it?
Yeah.
It sounded like a drunk Dave Grohl, but I don't know if he's sober. I don't know much about Dave Grohl, but he's like saying something along the lines of what you just said, like, if you got a great fucking band, man, and you all know what you're doing, just play as often as you can. Just keep creating and like all that other fucking shit, man. I'm doing my best Dave Grohl here, but that'll all just come later. Yeah. I think personally where I see it, and I think we could start kind of phasing towards the end of the episode here, but I think one of the angles that I see it from, it's purely rooted in ego and selfishness, and I'm aware of that. I just think that I missed so much about being in a band for 10 years. When I quit Live for Tomorrow, it was, of course, a personal decision, but it wasn't something I realized would affect me as much as it did until I joined Midwest Guys. And then it's like, during that 10-year gap, like, yes, Live for Tomorrow was still doing shows, Midwest Guys was doing shows, you guys were, like, doing tours, and you had what could be considered peaks, if not the peaks. Who knows? You're not guaranteed more than we have. But I see you and Kyle like embrace this acceptance of where we are as a band. And like, you know, whatever happens, what happens. But I never had that gap of time of like, no, dude, we got to grind. We got to do it. We got to push as hard as we possibly can. So I think that I just come at it with more like eager eyes than you seasoned veterans do. And sometimes that lets my ego get in the way of like, I don't know. I just want to create more and be more special than we are. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it would be like amazing to be able to play, you know, as many shows as possible.
I would love to play for a living. I would love to be able to do that.
But like where we're at right now, I feel like the only way to make a living doing this is if you're like a really good cover band.
Oh, man, that's Kyle's 10-year plan.
Yeah.
He said that.
But I mean, yeah, it's nice where we're at right now. I feel like we're at a point where it's been like, this is the most successful this band has been in a decade. Like, we've been incredibly fortunate to play all these amazing shows and festivals this year. And like, I honestly don't think like we've played a bad show.
No,
where we've had like
mess ups.
Yeah, not so great sets, but like
we've had some issues.
the shows overall have been like amazing.
Oh, yeah, great.
We're playing to like good crowds. We've had like great like.
We've also met some very supportive fans along the way. People who are like,
yeah.
who have announced that they are sort of diehard Midwest, and that supportive group around us. That's been great this year.
I mean, I honestly didn't have Midwest guys tattoo on my 2023 bingo card.
Hey, yeah, that's right.
And I mean, it's so cool to see like how much the band has grown in just this year alone, where we haven't been, you know, it doesn't feel like we've been crazy busy compared to like how the band has been in the past, but like just to see how much growth we've had without having to do like the, you know, be a TikTok work. Band.
Yeah, yep.
Like, that's the big thing. Like, I don't ever want to be, like, the TikTok band who's just, like, we're trying anything we can and posting, like, cringy reels. Like, I mean, some people might think the reels that we've posted are kind of cringy.
Ours like, are cringe by like, design, though.
Like, we film, like, some of those, like, really stupid skits that we did just promoting a lot of these shows that we were doing. Like, we did those because they're fun, not because it's like, okay, we have to do this.
And to promote like, the show.
Yeah, we only did that. This is some
extreme cope here.
we did that to promote the shows because it's fun and it was different compared to just like, well, here's a show flyer. Let's share this on our social media. It's like, let's have fun with it. Like, we're like, that's the whole purpose of being in a band. It's like, it's fun to do. If it's not fun to do, then it's not worth being in the band.
Right. If I can't make dick jokes on stage, what am I doing this for?
Exactly.
Well, hey, with that, unless there's anything more specific that you'd like to examine on here, this is your therapy session that you paid for. Oh, did you not pay? I'm going to need that, by the way.
Let's see if we can't get a sponsorship with Celsius.
Hold on, bro. I'm trying to get one from LaCroix. Slow down.
LaCroix's not going to give me any energy. I'm a dad. I need the caffeine.
You're right. Look them right in the eye and tell them they should start putting caffeine in those LaCroix's, because that's a $1 billion industry right there, right? Just squirt a little bit of caffeine in that water.
Just a little bit. That's all we need. I need like 400 milligrams a day and I'm good.
Speaking of, I think that that has pushed me to want to go get some espresso after this call. Are you familiar with Last Mile?
I am not.
Okay. Well, all right. That's all for me. Hey, thank you for joining. It's been too long. I've wanted to have you on for a little while, but I just wanted to have something to promote. I think at the early stage, Come Back From Me had just come out by the time that I started the podcast. And like, I don't know, I talk to you and Kyle, and I talk on this podcast often about, like, there is still a weird line for me between, like, I was a fan of the band for so long that, like, integrating into being, like, your guys' friends is very difficult for me because, like, I want to treat you like professionals, but also I want to, like, I want to be friends with you. So, like, I tried in those early days to, like, be very respectful of your time, but now that I've been a drama queen of the band and you know my real personality, I think it was easy to be like, you're doing the podcast tomorrow, I need you to do it.
Like, yeah, right, I mean, I'll do it. Luckily it worked out. I have childcare for today, so
I didn't know if like a nap got squeezed in or something. This was like a pretty lengthy nap.
No, what was happening? She had a sleepover with grandma, so.
Oh, that's right, you told me about that.
I actually got to sleep in a little bit this morning and I feel like a brand new human.
Beautiful.
It feels great.
Well, with that, to the listeners, check out JEJ3 Films for your video needs. He does music videos and wedding videos and photography. I also do the same thing, but I have to squeeze in a little plug just because he's looking right at me. But also, it is Monday currently, October 16th when this drops. In 2 days, October 18th, our new single Setback will be out. You could stream it anywhere, to my understanding.
It'll be available worldwide on every streaming platform you can think of.
Mr. Worldwide, we feature Pitbull on there.
We couldn't afford that feature.
So I shaved my head to look enough like him. I put on some aviators. We did the whole thing. It looked great.
We do have some dope merch for sale.
Yes, MidwestSkiesRock.com. We've got new beanies. We've got hats. We've got shirts. We've got other new shirts.
We have a million awesome stickers.
Yeah, can you show them off? You got them?
If you're into national parks, we have like this fun guy.
We got this one. We got this one. The Come Back For Me.
Oh, yeah. The classic Come Back For Me stickers.
Yep.
And then I don't have anything else here. They're all at
the
space.
As of announcing this, it does not exist, but it would be really cool to see some more future artwork based off of the artwork for the single of Setback, which is public now. Just follow us on social media at Midwest Skies. Midwest Skies Band? What are we?
Midwest Skies on Instagram and TikTok.
We have a TikTok?
And Facebook.
But MidwestSkiesRock.com for the merch. Setback comes out October 18th. If you haven't already, check out the music video for Come Back For Me. Check out James on social media. All right, you go ahead and hang out on the line for just a second, but I think that I'm contractually obligated to say that I love you and I appreciate you for joining the podcast.
I love you too.
Okay, thanks, Dad. All right, hold tight, and to the listeners. I appreciate you and I'll see you next week. Okay, bye.